Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone right. says, all
is
right,
there a theme
right.
song?
There's no wait. No, there is, but we play it in after. It's quite naff, but I'm just,
we can't do an acapella. Our singing voices aren't.
Sometimes, in the olden days, yeah. in sort of year one and two, you used to make up theme tunes
I know.
For the guests.
That's when we were in the sex stage of the relationship. Now yes. just, everything's dropped off.
Yes. Oh, and I feel like Tanya's arse. I feel like, you know, why don't you?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Should I drop a beat?
We're here on the Scummy Mummies podcast with Tanya Moody and Ellie Gibson.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Okay, welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
And who have we got today, Ellie?
Mm. Sorry, I had some tea. I didn't know you were going to ask me that. I thought you were going to ask her.
I know, exactly.
Who have we got?
We've got Tanya Moody.
Yes. Hello, Tanya. How are you?
I'm great. We're absolutely ecstatic to have you. For those of you who don't know you, should you just sort of tell the listener who you are? Who the hell are you, Tanya Moody?
Well, most people don't know me. I kind of pride myself on that fact. I'm very happy about it because I'm a jobbing actor. Mm-hmm. And you may remember me from such shows as... So I do a show called Motherland.
And which is going to have a third series, is that right? No,
yes, it is. Yes quite right. Oh,
comedy show about parenting, it never catch on. It's too niche.
No one wants to watch or listen to Parenthood. Yeah. No.
Not that we've been told by about 5 commission editors that parenting's too niche or anything, Tanya. We're not bitter.
We'll let that go eventually.
Anyway, sorry, back to you.
No, not at all. So that's the, I suppose that's where maybe the bulk of your listeners might know me from.
Yes.
You know, I never do things like reel off my CV because I find it too cringeworthy. You know, people always say, so what have you done?
She's been in Star Wars, listeners. You've been in Star Wars.
Blink and you'll miss me, though,
but
right?
You still work!
It was a pretty cool experience, but still, very, very quick.
Yes.
But Tanya, you're a baddie in Star Wars.
I know, it's wicked.
You're on the dark side.
Yes, yeah. They do.
So good. And I made up a whole backstory for myself as well, even though it was like, you know, one or two lines.
Yeah.
It was actually meant to be more lines. And then I got in there one day and after a fitting, they were like, do you mind just hanging around a bit? Because we're just discussing the scene. We might get you into rehearse something. I was like, okay, fine. And I went to the trailer and, you know, waited another hour. And I was like, it's fine. You know, I'm at Pinewood waiting in a trailer. This is great.
Yeah, you know, so exciting.
And then there's a knock on the door. Hi, Miss Moody. Hi, yes. Yeah, we've had to cut all your lines. So we're just... I was like...
Oh, no.
Because it's like it's a constantly malleable script, right? Because they're creating like the tightest story arc to get across their story. So when I saw how they cut out, I was like, yeah, I would have done the same, actually.
Okay.
It makes total sense. The other stuff, you know, the lines that I had, they would have been totally extraneous. It has to go, you know, Darth Doodah walks in, he says this, we get scared, he punishes somebody, everybody moves on. It's got to be boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Instead of me going, hello. Yes. Everyone listen to my backstory.
Did you not try a Jedi mind track on them? No, you don't need to cut my lines. My lines are very good. I shall perform them well.
Exactly.
I
kind of did that. So when I got on set finally on the day, I was just so happy to be there, and I was having such a good time. And of course, as well, I met friends who were doing the same scene that I didn't know were in it because we weren't allowed to tell anybody that we were doing it. So I got there on the first day, and I was like,
you're here!
Oh, I did it too, but I've got no lines!
Yeah,
oh, no!
Yeah, it was was fun. So I was in such a jolly tail waggy mood. So I think that J.J. Abrams kind of picked up on that. So he was like, oh, actually, Tanya, why don't you say that? So he was kind of making up lines for me to say as I went along. And I was thinking, oh, I wish I'd had them before. But it was fun. You know, it was really nice to be given something to get my teeth into.
But what a buzz. What an amazing
thing. So fun.
Thing.
Yeah. So, so fun.
And they gave you the character, wasn't it? They said, do you want to be in Star Wars? Like, who do you want to be?
No, it was like a proper, it was all, I was really taken aback how it seems like every part has a name. Even if someone doesn't say anything, they've got a name.
Right.
And they've got a kind of history. So, I mean, I think they gave me my name and I knew what scene it would be. And I knew it was on the dark side. And then I wrote myself because, you know, that's how I work. I'm a professional. And I wrote an entire backstory for myself to justify myself being in the room. So even though I had, you know, one or two lines, I was like, I know exactly why I'm saying that.
I know where she's been. I know where she's
exactly
going.
What I had for breakfast.
Yes. She used to work in a Paddy Power on Tatooine.
Exactly.
And now.
Yes, it was like that. Everything I knew about myself was great. I loved it.
Excellent.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, I want to be on that. Oh, I know a lady down the road who was the massage lady for Poe Dameron.
Oh, that's a great celebrity anecdote again.
Massage lady for Poe Dameron. I love it.
How many times have I told you, save these brilliant celebrity stories for Graham Norton. You're spending all your gold.
Oh, I know. Her name's Ruth.
I don't care.
Hi, Ruth, if you're listening.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's brilliant.
Who wouldn't want to massage Poe Dameron?
I know. I would be bragging about that. Oh. Hello.
Yeah, but she didn't do it, Tanya. It's just she knows someone who we don't know, we've never met, we're never going to meet, who's touched Poe Dameron. I mean, you know.
Who's touched him? He's moved into touching now. Not massage.
You've met someone who's touched like the whole of the cast of Star Wars.
Oh, there you go. I suppose so.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway. Yeah. But before we get more into career chat, we didn't just ask you here to, you know, we're not nerds. We didn't just invite you here to ask you about Star Wars. No. You can go now. No, not really.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Tanya, tell us about your family.
My mum and dad are both in Ottawa in Canada. Mm-hmm. That's where I was born.
Yeah.
And my stepdad as well, who's glorious, and he's been with my mum now for like over 30 years, so he's very much part of the family. And then my brother's in Toronto. He's an actor as well, and a producer and a director and a creator. And his, so my brother's name is Andrew, and his wife's name is Tanya, spelt the same way.
Wow. So are there two Tanya Moodys?
There are two Tanya Moodys, and my partner's name is Andrew.
Hang on.
Hello. And then I've got two nieces over there in Toronto. And then so my family here, I've got a 12-year-old girl named Willow. And that's it.
Excellent.
And your 12-year-old has just started year seven.
She's just finishing year seven. Yeah.
Because you've got one on the way, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I've just got a daughter in year six, and we just had like the Zoom chat with the deputy head at her school. And so we are just entering the kind of hormone big change.
Geez.
Will we get a bra or not? When will our periods come?
Just me and you.
I know, doing online dating is really hard. I'm sort of bracing myself because all it's the whole thing. Like she's been at a fairly hippie South London local primary school, and now we're going to do uniforms and all sorts of serious chat.
Yeah.
So it's a big thing. How has your first year been? I mean, it's been weird, obviously. In a cupboard, but yeah.
Yeah, I have to say I'm one of the lucky parents in that if she was any younger, I would have had to be dealing with homeschooling in an active way. Do you know what I mean? Year six, actually the curriculum in year six is very hard. I mean, for them, obviously it's straightforward because they've led up to it. But if you're going to ask, I mean, I can't even do their kind of long division.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And she asked me to help her with something and I'm like, well, this is how I did it in 1976.
Oh, that's better than me. I go, here's a calculator. why would anyone do maths by hand? That's ludicrous.
It's like, what? And then it would have had to be way more hands-on, you know? Yeah. Whereas year seven, what I have found, it could just be because I'm a terrible mum. I do admit that. It could just be because I'm a very bad person. But I've basically done nothing.
That sounds dreamy.
Yeah, I've done nothing. She's been in her room doing actual classes. They have to sign in on Zoom every morning at like, I think, 8:30, 8:45.
Yeah.
They do the full schedule of classes on Zoom.
Wow.
Yeah, and she has breaks. They even do PE. So she's got, I go to her room, she's got my yoga mat.
Oh, wow.
Do you know? It's the whole shaboodle, but from home.
Yeah.
And we still had the report cards and everything. So she's kept up.
Wow.
And I've just kind of stood back.
And you could just like start smoking in the garden, having prosecco at midday.
I know, exactly.
How are you doing, darling?
I know,
okay, great.
Exactly. My partner and I kissing by the garden shed, you know, having a fag, looking up at a room like, oh, she's done. Quick, put it out. Yeah, yeah.
So have you got any tips for the transition, surviving the transition?
Well, I think I had to make sure I didn't get involved or helicoptery around her social life. Because for me, what I realised was that the most important thing is that socially she feels anchored.
Yeah.
You know, all this concern about, oh, this class, that class, her grades, teaching, da-da-da-da, actually, at that stage, is entirely secondary.
Okay, that's great.
It's about her making friends, because mm-hmm. that's the only thing for my daughter that she was concerned about, and that's where her nerves came from.
Yeah.
Will I make any friends? Because she didn't know anybody at her new school. Do you know what I mean? And so I got on board with her to just focus on that and not talk about other stuff that parents would, that we would get our knickers in a twist about. Do you know what I mean?
We can have the sleepless nights.
Yeah, that's
stuff,
my business. So I was, she'd be like, oh, I won't make any friends. Like, of course you will.
Off you
You're
go.
A nice
go.
Girl. You know all the stuff. Yeah. Kind of really giving her that confidence. And then, you know, the first day meeting her, and she went to school in the first week with a stinking cold. So she was a bit kind of glassy-eyed anyway.
I think she's patient zero. I think.
Yeah. I know.
This is it.
Track and trace. Track and trace.
There we go. I hope they don't know where we live. But yeah, so yeah, so actually that was a bit of a, it ended up being a bit of an opener for her to meet some people, because she'd be sputtering away. And so one girl said to her, are you okay? And she went, no, I'm dying. And that apparently made them laugh. And then,
awesome.
Are, are you a Bronte sister? Yeah. Is it TB?
Yeah. Oh, bless her.
That's a really nice thing, because I think you think about the big transition, about all the new academic stuff. And yeah, I'm sort of worried about homework and all that sort of thing, because we've been literally doing fuck all at home.
I mean, we've talked about this before, but then that's been my attitude with lockdown as well. My kids are younger than yours. My kids are 5 and 9, but like, I don't really give a monkeys if they come out of this not knowing enough about the Romans. Like, I feel like if they want to read a book on Julius Caesar when they're 25, that's entirely up to them. But I care more about their sort of mental well-being. And again, not that they have to be gloriously happy and every day has to be a day of fun and adventure, because that's not feasible either.
Yeah.
But surely it's about, is your kid all right?
Yeah.
Is that... Is that what you're going for?
Absolutely. They just... I think what I learned very quickly in year 7 was that, and I'm pretty certain this is the same throughout all secondary schools, is that the first term, definitely, possibly even second term, it's just about them helping the students to learn how to learn in that way.
Mm. Yeah.
And they were really clear about telling us, don't get attached to whatever outcome she's getting at this stage. If her marks go up or down or whatever, they said, that's just normal. They're going to be oscillating all the time because they're learning how to learn. Mm. So then that, I think that's, I'm going to blame them for me pulling back, because I was just like, well, then I'm just going to.
What gonna, will be, will be.
Will be, bye.
Yes. Okay.
The helicopter has crashed.
Yeah. Forget it. Right. Take over, kind of thing.
We were saying at the beginning of the podcast, you were in this amazing show called Motherland, and you had a particular, I would say, version of motherhood that you portrayed as Meg. I loved the first series, but I think something about the second series, it became a bit larger and a bit more mucky. There is so much stuff about motherhood now, and often Ellie and I were like, we won't read this book, we won't watch this show, because we don't want to be influenced by...
We'll steal the jokes, basically.
Yeah, but I love that first episode you're in, because you just sort of burst into the little niche or the little group of mothers and say, right, let's get pissed, let's go out, let's piss on the street, let's fall down a bus.
Are you that mum in real life? Are you the let's have an average? Because we all know that mum. I don't think it's me. Is it you? I don't think it's...
No, it's not me. I'd like to think it was me that goes, let's go up. I'm always the last one to leave the pub.
Yeah.
I'm always the last.
True.
Yeah.
We always are the last people to leave.
To leave most things. Yeah, maybe we are that guy.
Yeah.
Now you see, I'm listening to you guys and I'm going, every single person I've ever met has had that conversation. All of my... Like, how many of my friends have, like, texted me going, it's me, isn't it? It's me. Oh my god, I can't believe you.
I'm the one going, come on, so one honored, more drink, but, come on, yeah. drink.
Can't believe it. You leave you based on us, you've never even met us. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I know. And so many of my friends have been like that. I'm like, well, to be honest with you, I am very happy that people have been so warm and welcoming and encouraging about it. But I'm also really surprised that so many women can relate to her. I don't think I know any Megs.
Yeah.
If I do, They've been very quiet about that around me, probably because I'm very boring.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, I wouldn't do that with you, Tanya. You're so tedious. No, I wouldn't do that with you.
So you're not a Meg character in real life?
Yeah. I mean, okay, hand on heart, I was Meg.
Right.
Up until I was 18-ish. When I was into that, my thing was I really liked psychedelics.
Yeah.
Shrooms, LSD. That was back in the day. If my kid hears this... Actually, we've had this chat already.
Okay,
we watched a documentary about psychedelics.
Mm.
So we had a very, very frank talk about all those things.
Yeah. I'm actually tempted now. I mean, not today. Yeah. But someone recently said, because I've been going through, you know, separation and trauma and all that sort of stuff. She said, the best thing I ever did was go to Amsterdam, take mushrooms for a weekend, and that sorted me out. I was like,
yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a great option.
I'm going to Kent with you this weekend with some Prosecco. What more do you want? Don't be so bloody greedy.
I'm so sorry, Ellie.
Wow.
Why don't I do a contrast and compare? Yeah, I'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I'll go to Kent. I'll go to Kent with the Prosecco just on my own. You go to Amsterdam with the mushrooms and we'll do Insta stories and we'll see who survives. We'll see who lives.
My partner and I went to Amsterdam because, well, we'd never been.
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't. He's been a lot with work. And so I was like, this isn't fair. Let's go to Amsterdam and let's just relax up ourselves. You know what I mean?
We all know what you mean, Tanya.
Yeah.
Let's just relax up ourselves
on a weekend in Amsterdam. And a friend of mine is Dutch and she said, now listen, Tanya, because I was only going to do edibles because I don't smoke. And she said, okay, if you're going to do an edible, don't eat all the cake because it's very strong. Just have a little bite. You know, it's enough. It's enough.
Can you eat a little amount of cake?
Do you know what I mean?
Like a Greg's Yum Yum.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like a little...
Like the stuff they give you for free at the counter on a plate. You know, when you get like the samples of the brownie, not the full brownie.
Yeah, but I've seen you. You don't ever have one sample.
No, I never have one sample. It's free.
Puts it back together. So it's like sort of brownie, Frankenstein brownie.
She's just like, oh, they've chopped up this whole cake for me. That's very kind.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly.
So she said have a little bit.
And so we got some cake, and I eventually, long story short, I end up having to eat the whole damn thing to feel anything. And then I realised, in my head, it's been so long since I've done this, like 30 years or something. Clearly, my tolerance levels are through the roof. Whereas my partner, on the other hand, he just fell asleep.
Awesome.
But I know.
Time to reconnect.
Party animal, right?
Yeah.
He's like, can we go back to the hotel room? Just fell asleep.
He needs to relax down himself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're relaxed. It's too relaxed, babes. Too relaxed.
I'm just
staying up, just watching Dutch TV, like just off my face.
You can do that in Catford.
Yeah. No. Yeah, mate, I can sort you out. No problem. Let me just send a text.
Anyway, big fan of Amsterdam.
Love your work. We love your work, Amsterdam.
You go, Helen. Love you go and you take some shrooms. We'd all like to watch. We'd all like to see it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear.
It's all very good.
Motherland, we're still talking about.
We're still talking about Motherland, sorry.
And as has been established, in the first series of Motherland, there were no black characters. Was that an issue for you? Is that something you thought about going into
So this is really interesting. Because obviously, I'm... The actor, in terms of like agency in these types of jobs, the actor is usually like the lowest on the rung in terms of agency, right? You get phoned up, you say, we want you to audition for this thing. You're up against like 100 other women, da 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 da. You go in, you duke it out until the end, and you get the part, you know?
Yeah.
And then you follow orders, basically. That's my job. I'm not complaining. That's the gig.
That's actoring in a nutshell by Tanya Moody.
In the actor's studio, Tanya Moody. Basically, you've got no fucking control over anything. Everyone thinks you're a piece of shit.
Just be fucking grateful. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, pretty much.
But write a backstory about you working in Paddy Power on Tatooine. That's what we're saying.
Yes, do all the work, do all that homework. So,
are you listening, RADA students? Are you listening?
Yeah, there you go.
I'm paying her for this.
But I did have those questions within me. I didn't kind of... I was curious about it. To me, when I watched the first series, I thought, this is like the perfect company and the perfect combination of characters. Why on earth would they fix something that wasn't broken?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was so scared that they were going to bring me in and I was going to ruin it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all I could do is trust them. Just trust, because they're all really high caliber writers.
Mm.
However, so once we did it, and then there was a Q&A after the whole thing had already happened and it had been aired, someone asked that question.
Mm.
And the writers who were there said very clearly, yes, we looked back on the first series, felt that it was unrepresentative of the demographic of London, and we felt, well, shame on us, basically. That was our bad. Is this London or not? Like, what are we going to commit to? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I heard her say that, I was like, oh, well, that sounds like Lovely, isn't it?
Bit of diversity, bless it.
It's
bless
nice,
it.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, oh, she had a dream. Yeah. Yeah.
So, oh, great. So, yeah, I was happy about that.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it is very clear that there are not enough representation of diverse mums in the media. Like, when what would you like to see? I mean, in terms of when you started off as a mother 12 years ago, did you feel like you were being represented?
Do you think it has changed? Do you think it has got better?
My experience as a mum back then in Southeast London, in an area that had already gone, you know, been gentrified. You know, I was in Peckham. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So it's like, and I moved to Peckham like before it was cool. People were saying, where is that?
I think you'll find Ellie was born there 40 years ago.
In 1977. Yeah. So my parents lived there because in the 70s, late 70s, it was a really rough, cheap area.
It was an outlier.
They couldn't afford to live in Dulwich or Blackheath.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's where.
Yeah. So by the time I had Willow, like, I don't know, 10 years later or something, it was dead trendy.
Yes.
And I can totally relate to this thing. There's this writer named Candice Braithwaite who wrote this book, I'm Not Your Baby Mother, which I've just ordered. I've not read it yet. But she said that her experience being a black mum was like the representation that she felt she was expected to strive for with this kind of horizontal stripes and sort of bobs and all that stuff. Mm. And when she said that, I was like, oh my God, I'm not going crazy. It is like that. And you don't sort of realise it. It's not a sense of resentment or anything. You just suddenly realise that, oh, of course, there is a cut-out picture. And I always felt like a bit of a square peg in a round hole. But at the same time, because I know who I am inside, obviously, as the human being, all the complexities of being a human being, I just kind of thought, well, I'll gravitate towards people who are like me. But I think they, you know, I would be seen on the surface as being, you know, a black mum running behind them, trying to flag them down, like, you know, going to, you know, whatever, jogging in the park with your pram.
Yeah.
And people being slightly like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think we're going to have much in common or whatever. And I kind of accepted that. I think it's my personality. I'm quite used to being an outlier for lots of different reasons. But that's entirely subjective to me. So I'm, you know, it's like I'm from Canada. I'm not originally from here. I've come from a really kind of weird middle class background. I went to like a French nunnery for school. Like, I know. Like, there's all these really weird things.
She's so weird, Ellie.
Yeah, like,
no wonder she went to live in Nunhead.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I was like, this shit is following me. If I really want to make a friend, I thrust myself on them. You can't get rid of me. If I want to be my friend, you can't get rid of me.
She's seen what she did when we opened the door. Honestly. I've really enjoyed it.
I'll never get that stain out.
She's not taking care of those social distancing rules, Ellie. Because you all know when you get that look from people like you, you're not in this gang.
Yeah.
And that must be horrific. Like going, oh, actually, no, I think you'll find we're these types of mums. And it becomes, not tribes, I'm trying to think.
But it is like, tribal, though.
It is.
Come on, yeah, it is, right?
Yeah.
Mums and all that.
But it's interesting because motherhood should be a way in which we connect, but it's also a massive way in which we disconnect, because it's like, are you breastfeeding or are you bottle feeding?
Yes.
Are you doing all those sort of things? Yes. And you suddenly find the differences rather than the similarities.
Absolutely. And also I was always very conscious of the potential disconnect between my experience and my friends who desperately wanted children but couldn't have them.
Mm. Yeah.
And I was always very trying to be as sensitive as possible of not othering them in any way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not being like, oh, well, now I have fulfilled my purpose as a woman by becoming a, you know, all those things that you can say in very casual ways.
Yeah.
And actually someone's gone,
I'm finally me.
This stuff. Actually, I don't know. There have been a lot of strange, outly, othery experiences being mum, but also I think as the weird artist in me, I've slightly fed off them as well. I've been like, oh wow, look what's happening now. Oh, interesting.
No, they're the weird ones.
Yeah.
Ooh, they're the weirdos.
Her, neat. And then finding my tribe has been great.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I always, and Ellie and I have talked about this before, that you find the boozy mums at school. You sniff them out.
Yes.
You sniff out the good time people as well. And you kind of, and once you get to primary school, I think, you kind of, and the kids get a bit older, you know the mums you're not just going to tolerate. You know the ones you actually really like. And that's kind of empowering because you're like, actually, I don't have time for this bullshit. I don't need to talk to you. I'll be polite to you, but I don't need to be your best friend.
Yeah, it's so interesting. They're listening.
What, was that? Is that me that she called?
Wait a minute. She didn't reply to my text from 3 years ago. Bitch.
You know, did not make the cut.
You sort of, I mean, I was sort of an older mum. Mm. I think, in medical terms, I was like a geriatric mother.
Oh, yeah, because you were older than 35.
I was 35 when I got pregnant, and so I think by the time she was like toddling and all that stuff and you're sort of having play dates, I was a bit older. I think I just got to the point where I was like, you know what, Tanya, you're not at school anymore. If someone's rubbing you the wrong way, you don't have to hang out with them.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's
and if there are young mums listening to this, just listen to these words, because I think you feel so self-conscious and you're sort of re-establishing yourself as a human being, but also your identity and all that sort of stuff. You're like, I just need friends, and I need... You don't really need heaps of friends. You need a couple of really good friends that you can be honest with.
Like, yes.
I just felt like I was pretending for the first couple of years because I can be like wildly... insecure, and I was like, oh yeah, of course I love eating cake and muffins, and I want to go to Costa, that's my favorite cafe, I'll go there, and just to accommodate people, to make them like you and make you feel like you're fitting in,
or that you're not alone, so you don't want to be isolated, right?
No. And I was I really much identified with the, I can't remember her name, the Irish character in Motherland who just wanted to be everyone's friend, and you could just see that she was desperate to be loved. I was like, oh, she's a little bit me. I could see that.
Whereas I hate most people, so I quite quickly was like, fuck this is bullshit.
Isn't that funny?
I was like, let's go for a pint. What's wrong? We've got nothing, we've got no job, we've got nothing else to do. All right, we've got to look after
you. So you relate to Diane Morgan's character?
I think I had a weird thing where I ended up meeting up with a friend of mine, because my background was in video games journalism. Mm-hmm. I know, it's like going to the French nunnery, it's just weird.
It's like that, isn't it? You can relate
just gloss over it. And so I sort of reconnected with this mate of mine called Steve, who, because we used to go on press trips together and like do all sorts of terrible things. Each other, just to be clear. Just to be completely clear.
As if you'd remember.
True.
You could get those stains out.
Yeah.
I don't know why you couldn't get mine out. Anyway.
But I remember, because I used to like hanging out with him, because we had a very good system. We would meet, because he lived in northwest London, so the other side. So we would meet in the middle once a week when our boys were about a month apart. Mm. And we would meet, we would do an activity. So we would go to the Natural History Museum, or we'd go to a park, or we'd do something worthy that made us feel like good parents.
Yeah.
And then when it got to about lunchtime, we would then wheel them round in the buggies until one of them fell asleep. And then whichever one fell asleep first, that parent would dive into the nearest pub. It didn't matter if it was a Yates's, if it was an O'Neill's, it didn't matter. It was an off license sometime. Yeah. That person would go in.
Get the Polish lager.
Get the lagers in, sit down. The other person, when their baby came to sleep, they would go in. Mm. And then we would sit there and we'd drink as much lager as possible until the babies woke up. Which wouldn't be that much, because, so babies don't sleep very long. And then we just go
drink very fast.
I do drink very fast.
Like a gannet.
Yeah. But that sort of, don't say this to Steve, because his ego will be unbearable, but that sort of saved me, I think. I was like, here's this friend. And it was, and because he was a bloke, we couldn't talk about breastfeeding or the birth.
All
or
that stuff.
The stuff that I think sometimes as women, of course it's important to talk about that stuff, but sometimes it's like, our blokes have football and they've got nothing to say to each other.
Yeah.
We've got episiotomies. Do you know what I mean? It feels like
oh my God, you're right.
and I don't give a shit about football. Steve loves it. But, so we actually had some quite good conversations about other things.
Yeah. That not just sports and squares.
Also, sometimes we just sit in silence and drink. That's,
just stare off into the distance, questioning your life.
So I'm not saying everyone should have a Steve. I'm saying everyone needs to find, I think, what works for them. And that might be sitting in a pub with a bloke you used to go to Romanian strip clubs with. Or it might be sitting in a coffee shop with six. Yeah. No judgment on that either. If that works for you, wicked. Mm. Good for you.
Yeah, exactly.
I did a master's degree.
Did you?
I did.
In muslin squares or episiotomies?
I did a master's degree in actor training.
Wow. Awesome.
When she was... I'm guessing she's about 3 or 4-ish or something.
My God, your brain worked then.
Oh, well, I did it because I was worried about my brain.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I'd spent so many hours singing along to Baba. They wouldn't even let us sing Baba Black Sheep. We had to sing Baba Happy Sheep.
No!
Which made me want to jump out a window.
Oh my God.
Did you raise it?
I did a bit of a grum, like, what? Yeah. What? There I'm a black person in here and I want to sing Baba Black. Yes.
I understand what? That I am not a sheep. Oh, yeah,
exactly.
And that white people are able to distinguish between those two things.
Do you know what I mean? In a freaking hall, a church hall that smells like freaking nappies and pee, and you know,
there are no happy sheep here.
There are no happy sheep, and I got so worried about my intellect.
Yeah, I think you know, do, yeah.
I felt it was dribbling out of my ear, so I was like, I'm going to do a master's degree.
Yeah. I did my stand-up comedy course when Charlie was 15 months old.
There you
because
go.
I was like, well, again, mainly it was an excuse to go to a pub once a week. But it was just like, yeah, I need to do something to use this thing. I don't know if I'm going to be any good at this or whatever. Did you know you were going to be good at acting, though? Yeah, of course you did. Well,
she was an actor.
Well, listener, if you could see the look on my face. Perhaps, you know, I knew I had a spot of talent.
You had a spark.
Oh my God.
And now it's a burning flame.
But were you like the classic mature age student? Like, you were on time every day, you did your assignments on time and all that sort of thing. Were you like a keen student, or were you just grateful to be there?
No, listener, if you could see my face now, it's horrified. I feel ashamed.
just another extension, please. I'll hand the essay in, I promise.
I was the worst student. Mm. But I think once I cottoned on that actually the things that I was bad at wouldn't matter for me. I decided that because I knew I wanted to be an actor. Mm. And I made a deal with my teachers at secondary school. I made a proposition. I said, if you let me just do the classes that I want, that I'm good at, and then in the morning and in the afternoon, I will go and work in a theatre and get work experience. Will you give me the grades that I need to pass? Mm. And they were like, yeah, sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then did you come to London to go to uni then?
Yeah, I came. So I was 17 at the time. For me, the idea of being an actor, my brother was an actor and I knew all of his mates were actors. And I assumed that it was a life of being impecunious and mostly drunk. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And kind
lovely.
Of... Yeah, yeah, like
you're thinking of comedians.
Yeah.
That's the mistake you've made there.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I just assumed that, okay, this is going to be a hard life, so I should study, and then it's all going to up my chances of getting jobs instead of just winging it. So I asked them, I said, right, where should I study? And I said, oh, go to England. Definitely go to England, because that's the epicenter of theatre on the planet, as it were. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Obviously, I know, you know, probably be listeners going, no, it isn't, or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
I think you'll find Sydney's amazing.
Yeah. I get that.
I put a different musical on every week.
Sorry, Kate Blanchett, if you're listening, it's fine.
I'm not sorry, Kate Blanchett. You're not listening anyway.
But, you know, For me, as a 17-year-old, my older brother's mate saying that, it makes sense. Do you know what I mean? That time, 1989 or whatever it was.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I just thought, and you know, when you think about 1989, it's not as if you can look on your smartphone, Verada, and phone them up or something. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
No.
So I don't even know how the hell I got their number. And I must have gone to a library or something.
Yeah, there was
I must have gone home and with the kind of dial phone.
Yes.
With the cord. You know, dialing the
hello, Rada.
Distance number. Yeah. You know, waiting until whatever.
Rada 241.
Yeah. It was like that.
Yes, I'm sure that can be arranged.
Yes,
Get on the next flight and we'll have someone meet you at the airport.
It was like that. Hi, is this Rada? Yeah. I'm Tanya. I'm in Canada. I really like to audition. It was like that, you know. They auditioned in New York. I was 17 years old at the time and I was really arsy. I was like the teenager from hell, and this is why I'm scared of my daughter, that I'm going to get payback, karmic payback.
Yeah, hold on.
Do you know what I mean? And so I booked this audition, and I walked up to my mum, tapped her on the shoulder, I'm going to New York to audition for Rada. And then walked off. And she was just silent. She kind of just looked, you know, I'd imagine the look that I would give my daughter.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? A, who, what? What's going on? Why are you talking to me like that? B, what the fuck is Rada? Yeah.
What's a Rada?
Yeah, do you know what I mean? She's totally silent.
Yeah.
I went back, you know, stormed off in my 17-year-old, like, this is how I walk, sat down. And then my brother just walked in the room about half an hour later. He went, I'm going to New York with you. I went, no, you're not. He said, yes, I am. Mum says that I have to. And that was it. Like, end of conversation. Wow. I know. And she kind of said, she phoned mates of hers that lived there that she'd known in Jamaica and stuff. And we had somewhere to stay. And that was it. Yeah.
And the rest is history. So yes, so that was your beginnings, and now here we are. And here we are. You're an actor in a coronavirus world. What's that like, mate? That's, you know,
yeah, it's
not
very,
ideal, is it?
Being an actor in coronavirus world is very broke, I suppose. If there are some positive takeaways
from the
coronavirus era, is that I don't feel alone. You talk to people, you go, I'm broke. People go, yeah, cry me river, like me too. Yeah. Oh, you too? Yeah, me too. Of course, me too. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was a bit like, well, I still don't know. We haven't been relying on an income or anything. But I'm a Buddhist. I've been a Buddhist now for over a quarter of a century, like 26, 27 years. So I don't get scared anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It always goes to a place in my psyche where I'm like, okay, well, let's see. Okay, what are we going to do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas I think maybe, like, before I started practicing or early on in my practice, there would have been a period of, like, terror.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, I've got to... But I've had this, especially as an actor, you're freelance. Well, in particular as an actor. You go through so many periods of being entirely impecunious, like, wiped out, right? You hope that the accumulation of those periods would also... give you a sense of, I know this feeling. I've been here before. And I got out the other end. It's really about how you manage psychologically, emotionally. Mm. This is what I always say to students as well. Being an actor is like 99% about how you cope with being out of work. Do you know what I mean? Because when you're in work, you're in work, right?
Yeah.
I would imagine, is being a Buddhist quite helpful for motherhood as well?
Oh, deeply.
Yeah?
Deeply. I mean, the good thing about it is the practice is daily and it's constant. So it's like constant flowing water. So it's always there as the foundation. So I chant in the morning. I chant Nam-myoho Renge-kyo. If anyone's seen the Tina Turner story, they would have seen this because she does it and you hear it in the film. So it's that thing that she does. Chant Nam-myoho Renge-kyo in the morning for however long I can do it. And in the evening, and it kind of... So what you're doing in that is that you're drawing forth what we call our Buddhahood, which is our wisdom, our courage, our compassion, and boundless energy. Okay?
Awesome.
So this is like the notion that there's constant energy in the universe. And so you're tapping into that. So even at your lowest frickin' periods, when you're like, I'm literally on the ground kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because there are times, obviously, we're humans. There are times where you just literally feel like, that's it. I'm done. Mm. I am done.
Yeah.
But the difference with having the practice is that you can feel like you're done, but that's different from feeling like you're defeated. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I haven't felt defeated in a long time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I felt like my back is against the wall, and I've wailed and I've cried and I've been furious and I've been scared and all this stuff, but I've never felt defeated.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You sort of go, with the practice, you go, come on, push, push. It's like giving birth. Push! Come on, my push, the kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then you get over that and you're like, okay. And then all the accumulated extra wisdom that you get and that kind of... And then you're able to help other people because you're able to say, girl, I know where you're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there. Take my hand. Listen to me. We're going to do this together sort of thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Because Ellie does what I like to call jibber jabber.
She's very respectful.
Very respectful.
What's it called?
Yeah, you're
Transcendental meditation.
Yes. Yeah.
Transcendental meditation. Yeah. So bits and rags, 20 minutes, twice a day.
Yes.
You chant a thing, but in your head.
Yes.
It's a secret.
It's a secret.
Yes, you're given that you're bestowed with your own personal.
But it's similar to what you talk. Obviously not quite as deep. I haven't done the same studying as I imagine you've done. But I do get that thing of like, I do feel calmer afterwards. And it does feel a bit like, it just feels a bit like your mobile phone, doesn't it? And you've just recharged your battery about sometimes 18%. Yes.
I know. Sometimes literally, when you know the times you can just plug it in for like a second. And then you've got to go. Right.
But at least sometimes you're like, at least I can look at Facebook for 5 minutes before bed. It's like that, isn't it? So, yeah. So come on, she's doing Buddhism, I'm doing TM.
Well,
what are you going to do?
I was going to eat some mushrooms and herbs today.
Oh, yes, of course.
That's a thing.
That's going to kill me.
That'll open your third eye. And if it doesn't, you can pay someone in Amsterdam who will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe I'll try it. I'll give it a go. After being separated, I now feel like I'm open to anything.
Wow.
And anyone.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend.
But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
But how are you feeling now, Tanya? I guess about the state of the world, genuinely, it's been a tough time, shall we say, not just for actors, weirdly.
Yeah. It's funny you should say that. I've been wondering how the rest of the world has been coping.
Do you think this could be a real turning point for, you know, I'm trying to dig into your Buddhist wisdom. That's what I'm saying is, can you just tell me everything's going to be all right, please, Tanya?
Yeah, but, you know, things, in order for us to see what's wrong, the shit has to come out, right?
Yeah. Mm.
That's the only way that you can know that there's shit to clean up. Mm. Do you know? So, you know, in Buddhism, we liken it to, like, if you, you know, when you turn on a garden hose after it's just been lying about all winter.
Yeah.
Is that a euphemism? All the... Yeah, I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean, don't you? I've been married a long time. I know exactly what you mean. Sorry, garden hose.
Flattery. Yeah, so you turn on a garden hose and all the crap, you know, you get the dirt, the leaves, that stuff, and then the clear water flows, right? I suppose that's helped me to put things into perspective because it's very easy to, you know, like any, the human response to things is like, oh, this is just fucking terrible. It's just awful. You know what I mean? Just see the, like, it's just bad. Yeah. Do you know? Whereas in Buddhism, it's like, well, nothing is fully bad, in a sense. There's always, everything has an enlightened aspect to it. Everything has Buddhahood within it, even our lowest, darkest places. So it's like,
Donald Trump?
Well, this is the thing, okay?
I was thinking it, but I didn't say it, but you're going to say it.
I know, this is the thing, because I talk to my daughter about this a lot, obviously, because she's the daughter of two Buddhists, and she's becoming politically aware and everything, and becoming a bit of an activist herself and everything. She's like, oh, Donald Trump, you know, I appreciate that. And we don't have to like him, but in Buddhism, we'd have to recognize that he has Buddhahood, which means he has the potential to manifest his wisdom, his courage, his compassion. He has the potential. Whether or not people pick up on that, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Is a whole other thing.
Tanya, yes. I have the potential to be a world-class chess player. Yeah. I'm not going to become one.
Exactly.
I have the potential to be an astronaut.
This is the thing. Do you know? So it's like you've got to kind of, and this is teaching my daughter about the concept of Buddhism and Buddhahood and saying, well, you know, and some people as well just will never want to manifest that. Mm-hmm. It's just a fact. There's some people who just, like Star Wars, you know what I mean? They'll always kind of be on the dark side.
Yeah,
do you know?
Yeah.
And yet those people are valuable and important as well, because in order for there to be light, there has to be the dark.
There must be balance in the Force,
yes,
Tanya!
Yes, there must be balance in the Force. Oh, you see?
Amazing.
I'm actually a
almost
Jedi.
Almost like George Lucas stole all those ideas,
know,
isn't
exactly.
it? It's almost like you got them from somewhere.
Yes.
I always think of that, and like, would we have Jacinda Ardern if we didn't have like the bad dudes? Like, you know, would the left be as motivated if the right wasn't so bad? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but also this binary, you know, it is a false binary of left good, right bad as well. Do you know what I mean? There is a false binary there, because ultimately it's about, we're all individuals, as it were, and this thing, these political platforms and ideologies and narratives, human beings, we have to create narratives, don't we, in order to get power. You know, we have to control, for me to control a certain amount of people, I've got to create a narrative, otherwise they're just going to think I'm nobody.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to go, everyone, this is the cult of the, you know, the glass of the water cult, And I am the glass of water leader. And we, you know, you create this narrative. People go, oh, I'm going to buy into that. I like her.
Yeah.
You are very compelling. Yeah.
I agree with everything she says.
Yeah, excuse me. Do you get free water? I'm in.
All that stuff.
I'm so thirsty right now.
You know, and so I'm always really curious about these ideologies and platforms, because I could pick parts of like right wing think that like I would go, well, that's actually doesn't, it's not, it makes a little bit of sense. And I could pick parts of left wing ideology and go, well, that's, I don't know if that's right. Do you know what I mean? Everything is, it's not as clear as like they are the good ones and those are the bad ones. And that's why I don't, I, for me, I don't necessarily ascribe to, I mean, I obviously know which way I vote, which is more, it goes towards more how I am as a Buddhist.
UKIP then?
There you go. But at the same time, no one, I vote because there, people have fought hard for me to have the privilege to vote.
Yeah.
I feel a moral responsibility, an ethical responsibility to vote.
Yeah.
But there's never been a political party where I've been fully like, they're exactly like Buddhists. You know what I mean? They're, you know, and they're, yeah, well, individuals within a party, and you go, why have they done that? Why have they said that?
Yeah.
That's awful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's, yeah, it's sort of sometimes they'll do because the others, yes, are so shit.
Well, yes.
It's like, you know, you think, well, that's sort of kind of, yeah, like me.
You know, and is it good enough? Yeah. Is it good enough?
Yeah.
Really? For us as humans? Mm. Is it really good enough?
So in a nutshell, the garden hose is clear. It's all going to be fine. It's all going to be fine. Good. That's,
well,
all
right. You know,
and we should look to Star Wars for answers.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Tanya's, well, you know, it's going to, you know, starting this a cult. Is,
if you think about the eras of humanity, you know, we're in for the long haul.
Yeah.
Of things and changing, attitudes changing. We've made centuries of profound negative causes as humanity, not only towards one another, but towards the planet. Do you know?
Yeah.
Fundamentally, we have to get our lives in line with like a fundamental sense of respect for all living things. Mm. Yeah?
Yeah. It feels a bit lacking at the moment.
It's
Daniel,
so,
to
you
be
know,
honest.
Yeah. And this has been for centuries. It's not, this isn't new.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. I mean, what's great is that we're in an era where like this recent Black Lives Matter groundswell, it does feel totally different to the other times there've been, we've witnessed atrocities that have been videoed and people have said the term hashtag Black Lives Matter. It feels totally different this time. And I think it's because this time there've been so many white allies that have been like, you're absolutely bloody right.
Yeah, we've got to step up now.
We've had enough. There's been allies and it's been so moving. I mean, when all this happened with, I mean, I hate using George Floyd's name in, like, when I'm speaking metaphorically or, like, in talking, you know, anecdotally, because I think, you know, this, his life has been lost. It's terrible. I'm very grateful to his life and what happened because, you know, I spent every day, I just cried every day for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And these are just the things that are being recorded. And that's just one country.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like so.
Yeah.
And such a drop in the ocean about fundamental inequalities and people realizing that actually a rising tide raises all boats. So this is why I need to be an ally. Because actually, if things become more equitable for this group, it's more equitable for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I've never heard that phrase before, but I think that sums it up.
It is a shame to me almost that it has to be that it can't just be fairness for the sake of fairness, equality, because that's the right thing to do. But I hear what you're saying, that the angle may be to some people it needs to be presented as this is for the good of the whole, you know.
Yeah, it's the truth, you know. But, you know, like the Women's Equality Party motto, you know, equality is better for everyone.
Mm.
It really is, you know. And I think I've seen amazing things that friends who up until this point had just been friends or people I liked, and they've really pulled out their allyship. And I've been like, oh my God, you're a great human being.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's totally given me a new spin on this, on the people, you know, like, wow. So that's a positive thing.
Yeah, that's good. That's a positive note to end. I'm happy with that. I'll take that.
Oh. I mean, we've covered a lot.
Very moved. I feel very, very intense. I like it. I feel like we're learning things, mate. We're learning things.
That's why we got her on. She's
usually
clever and
we just
stuff.
Talk about tits. It's good.
I didn't even know she was a Buddhist. And then we found out all sorts of exciting things. Excellent.
I might give it a dabble. I know. Don't think you can do that, can you? You can't just dabble in it.
It's not like a one-night stand.
You yes, you go, can.
Oh, okay.
Is it like Bailey's? It's all right just to have a bit of Christmas.
Of course.
Touch of Buddhism with Ellie Gibson. Yeah.
Touch my Buddhism with Ellie Gibson.
You're going to Buddha butter. You've got a Buddha butter.
I can't believe it's not Buddha.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a Buddha butter dish. Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, he's over there. He's over there.
Oh, there's Buddha. Oh, he's always here.
Oh, he's lovely.
He actually is a butter dish. The butter, you lift it up and the butter goes underneath. I thought it was funny at the time. Now I just think it's very spiritual, possibly even disrespectful.
Right.
Well, now at the end of the podcast, Tanya, we do like to end with a scummy mummy confession. So my confession is, I think we've definitely over lockdown let the 5-year-old watch too much television and YouTube, because he started picking up like turns of phrase that really he doesn't really understand. He's far too young.
Yeah.
And you can't help sort of going, where have you got that from? You don't really know what that means. And then the other day he helped me clear the table, right? And I went, oh, well done, Joe. That's good helping. And he went, ah, I have my uses.
You're five. Where is that?
You don't know that. You haven't read that in a book.
Funny.
Where have you got that from? So, Helen, have you a scummy mummy confession?
I do. So, as we all know, I've got a new kitten, my therapy cat, Fozzie. And I love him. He gets away with murder. He's always on the kitchen table. I'm doing all the wrong things. Anyway, so I had my Ocado order the other day. As Tanya said, how did I get that? I don't know. It was magic. Mm. That's 44,000.
The Ocado man knows.
Anyway, I had all my shopping out and I was trying to put it away. And I noticed the cat had literally got into the bag and had nibbled a corner off the pizza.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, what should I do here? Probably should cut it off and reseal it. But what did I do, Ellie? Just stuck it in the fridge.
The reason we know this is because we just did a live Instagram show and she told this story. And when you originally told the story, you said, oh, so I cut it off and I put the pizza in the fridge. And I immediately knew that was horseshit, Tanya. Ah. That would involve...
That's not a Helen Thorne method.
That would involve Helen opening the drawer, getting out the knife, opening the pizza, cutting the bit of the pizza, wrapping up the pizza and putting it in the fridge. Mm. That's six things. Mm. That's five steps too far for a Helen Thorne event.
Yeah.
So I said to you, I bet you just put it straight in the fridge. And what did you say?
Yes, I did. I have been seen. I know. But I know when I cook the pizza, I will cut the cat end off.
Well, cut believe it when I see end. It.
That end of the pizza.
My friend, because I realise that the cat does, cat does a poo in the kid. Cat litter tray, comes out, walks around, sits on everything. My friend said, your house is probably about 80% bum juice right now.
Yeah, exactly. Little kiss marks.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Have you got a cat, Tanya?
Even worse in terms of that kind of thing, I've got a dog.
Yes.
And they are not clean animals.
No.
Doesn't stop me from kissing her on the cheek all the time.
I was going to say, do you kiss it?
Oh. I kiss her on the cheek. I don't kiss her on the lips.
You don't kiss it.
Oh. She's got a little chunky bit on her cheek there and
a
I kiss her
gel,
there.
Little
and
cheek.
I just sort of accepted, if this kills me, I'm good with that. Because I want to kiss her because she's so cute.
Oh.
But yeah, I'll be holding her and she'll like fart into my arm. And you kind of feel the warm end, you know.
The hot cloud.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
and do you quite like
gross.
It secretly?
You know, I never got to that stage of liking it.
It's not like when
gross.
You do a fart in the bath and it's really satisfying.
Yeah, no, it's like, ooh, that's disgusting.
So have you got a confession you'd like to share?
Yeah, I do.
Excellent.
I do. I have a recent one, actually, because, into the lockdown, 2 weeks in the lockdown, I broke my ankle. So because of the surgery, I had to take penicillin. And so I've been on this course of penicillin, which I swore that I hadn't finished because it was like so many freaking pills, right?
Yeah.
And I was in the kitchen. I was like, oh, and you can't move around the house very quickly. So I send my minions out to do things for me a lot. My partner, my kids. Can you just go get this for mummy kind of thing? I could have sworn I had more penicillin to take. So I said to Willow, I said, darling, can you go up to my bedroom? Go up to mummy's bedroom. I'm looking for a box of pills, yeah? I described the box, and I said, I think they're in the drawer next to my bed.
Uh-oh.
What
uh-oh.
Are in drawers uh-oh. Next to my bed, listeners? Oh, God. Oh, they are.
Dear listener. But I was just like, didn't even think about it. And she called down. She's like, I can't find it. Are you sure? Have you checked the drawer? And she went back. And she said, do you mean the drawer next to your side of the bed? I said, yeah. And she said, well, it's not there. And then she kind of went downstairs and went away. And I was like, you know what? I'm sure it is. But she just... I went upstairs, opened the drawer, and the veiny end of my dildo was just...
The veiny end!
The veiny end!
Not even the battery end!
Sticking out!
And I was just like...
Like a bald mole.
Yeah. Yeah. The bit where they've taken all the care to really kind of do all the realistic, lifelike...
Yes, yes. Oh. Like a Michelangelo in silicon.
Yeah, exactly. Like David's...
As if we care
own
about that.
Organ.
As if that's what we're looking for.
Yeah.
Oh, this one's not very realistic. Yeah. I shan't put that up there.
You know? No. And not only that, but lying on top of it, only half covering it at the stage, was my special pair of sexy knickers. That I keep in the drawer. I don't even know why I keep it in the drawer. Why is it in there?
It's keeping the dildo company.
Why?
Like a little cloak.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Oh
yeah.
Oh,
and I was just like, wow.
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 Oh, no. Okie dokie.
And you, if you have that thing in your mind, and you go, should I talk to her about it? And you go, you know what? Let's just pretend like nothing happened. Let's just pretend like
they don't want to talk about it, do they? They're like, no.
She doesn't want to talk about that.
They don't have that conversation. Do you know? She'll come and ask you if she.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there we go. Normally we would sell tickets for our tour, but we can't. You can't come, so that's that.
That's it.
We've got a shop, though, Helen.
We do. ScummyMummyShopEllie.com. We sell mugs.
It's ScummyMummyShop.com, not ScummyMummyShopEllie.com. Although we should have called it. That's what I wanted to call it originally.
Oh, well, that's the moment for another time. And we sell our t shirts and our mugs, Ellie.
Yes. Mugs are now priced £12. Which means we do make a small profit rather than the loss of 22 pence we originally made. So I'm sorry about it. That's economics. I didn't invent capitalism. That's the way the world is.
You shouldn't have sold them for £9. Yeah. That's what we're saying.
It was £8, wasn't
it?
Ridiculous when you think about
absolutely.
It. How much are they in John Lewis? 25? I don't know.
I know. We're practically giving them away. Well, we were before.
Yes.
So thank you.
Obviously, follow us on the Instagram and all that. Do all that if you like.
Please rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends all the jazz. And and one day we'll do... theatre again, Ellie. We will.
Well, theatre's a strong word, mate. I don't think we ever did theatre. Theatre?
We're in theatres.
One day we'll go in a theatre and we'll tell some tit jokes. I think that's probably a more...
And people will like it,
again,
Ellie.
Trade description act, Helen. We've got to be honest here.
Yeah.
Tanya, do you have something you'd like to plug to the listener?
Try chanting Nem-myoho Renge-kyo.
We might do an Insta story about that. And where can people find you? What's your handles on social medias, Tanya?
So Instagram, it's @TanyaGraceMoody.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter, @TanyaMoody. It's all very...
Tanya Moody, it's on brand.
It's like a sort of theme there.
Yes,
do you know what I mean?
Like we will put the links in the show notes. And and highly recommend, do watch Motherland.
Oh, and follow my dog on Instagram.
What?
Yeah.
She only mentions this now.
@BellaMiniBully.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do we get to see you kissing her cheek?
Oh, like so many kisses.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
Yeah, and you can just tell how stinky she is by looking at her.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Tanya, you've been an amazing guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming to sit in my garden. Sorry, everyone, it was a bit windy again today, but I think it's all right.
I don't think it was as windy as the other day.
Yeah.
I think it was better.
Oh, thank you so much, Tanya.
Thank you. It's been so fun.
Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Can we just have a bit of you chanting for the outtake so we know how it's done?
Yes.
Okay.
Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, Nam-myoho Renge-kyo. Like that.
Oh, you're better already, mate. Yeah.
That's my new ringtone.
Lovely stuff.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.